Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and today we dive beneath the headlines on healthcare. New data from the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers, reported in the Boston Globe, shows most patients seeking care at centers under the league's umbrella have to wait well over a month for a checkup. Healthcare leaders say worker shortages are driving the long wait times, and that without state intervention, those lags in service could make racial and socioeconomic health gaps worse. It is another knot in this gnarly chain of the economy and affordability and health equity here in the state. So here to help us try to at least untangle the problem a little, Michael Curry, CEO of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers, and Christina Severin, who is president of the Boston-based Community Care Cooperative, or C3. They are made up of a group of healthcare centers and providers who take funding from the Federal Health Resources and Service Administration. Michael, welcome back.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Good to have you. And Christina, welcome to you.
Good morning.
So, Michael, it's great to have you too. Michael, I'll start with you. According to the data from your group, new patients at community health centers here waiting an average of almost 80 days to see a primary care provider, existing patients looking at 44 days on average. How does that compare to wait times from, let's say, pre-COVID? Are things getting better? Are they getting worse? I got to assume this is worse.
Yeah, they've definitely gotten worse, Tiziana. We know that we've always been challenged on the health center side because we've been historically under-reimbursed. We compete for providers and staff with higher-paying institutions. We serve the most acutely challenged patients from Western Mass to North Shore, South Shore, and Greater Boston. And that comes at a challenge for us. But COVID really exacerbated what we were seeing across the state, because now, as you mentioned, 74% of community health centers have a wait list for new primary care patients. 84% of Massachusetts health centers have a wait list for new behavioral health patients. And even if you're an existing patient of a health center and you're already locked into care, you could wait 44 days for just routine care. That is a worse situation than it was before the pandemic. And it's a myriad of factors I've already mentioned, workforce challenges now exacerbated by COVID. We have to solve for it, Tiziana, because the most vulnerable among us are the patients that we serve, and access and quality is so key to their survival and to their communities.
So, Michael, we're going to unpack all of that as we go through this conversation. I want to just feed back to you to make sure that we sort of understand the core things that you said at the beginning there. The healthcare practitioners who work for you could work lots of different places. The community centers get reimbursed less. They get paid back less for the services provided, which means the people who work there will get paid less. So it's harder to attract people. The patients can be sicker and more complicated, and a lot of times are being served in tougher, more remote, so tougher to get to and tougher to serve areas. And that was all before the pandemic, and now things have just gotten harder. Do I have that right?
You have it all right. And the only thing I'll add on to that is that the good news was that the past administration repositioned health centers across the state with an increase in reimbursement. But we're talking about long-time systemic under-reimbursement of health centers. So that a significant development in repositioning health centers with higher reimbursement was just last year. We'll see that over time. But what's happening is the workforce crisis is really eating away at the gains from the increased reimbursement. So it is, I call it a perfect storm of circumstances.
And just when you say past administration, I assume you mean the Baker administration at the state
Correct.
Level, right? Yeah.
So yeah.
So let me turn to Christina Severin here. Of course, you know, I can hear a listener asking, well, gosh, I've waited a long time to see a specialist. You know, it's hard for me to get to see someone, too. Let me ask you, is there any reason to believe that the waits are different at other types of doctor's offices than the kinds of strains? And Michael's painted a pretty clear causal picture here of what the strains are for community health centers. But Christina, is there a reason to believe that picture looks different in other kinds of health centers?
Tiziana, a couple of clarifying things. One, just a friendly amendment to my introduction is that we represent health centers throughout the state, just because that may become geographically relevant in our conversation this morning. I think that there has been an impact on other types of primary care and on access to specialists throughout the Commonwealth from pre-pandemic to where we are today. And building off of what Michael said, I think the impact has a continuum with providers who come to work in communities that are disproportionately serving residents who are non-white and or who have low incomes being more impacted by this issue of access to care. So I think the system at large has been impacted by the pandemic. And I think that certain areas of the system have been disproportionately impacted, as Michael talked about.
So I want to stay with that for a minute longer. And when we said Boston-based, I think we didn't mean to imply only your membership is only in Boston. So I'm glad that you clarified that, Christina. Thank you for that. I'll stay with you for a minute longer because here, let me tell you one of the things that was on my mind as I was reading this data and thinking this through. So let's move forward. I think you think about supply and demand, right, Christina? We keep hearing that with COVID fatigue cost of student loans and those kinds of things, we're going to continue to see a shortage overall in people who work in healthcare, doctors, nurses, technicians, et cetera. We also continue to hear that there is increased demand in our vulnerable populations in Massachusetts and that due to immigration, we're also rapidly growing a vulnerable population in Massachusetts right now. And I think about the fact that community health centers also disproportionately serve the disenfranchised, the marginalized, and provide culturally responsive care and linguistically appropriate care, et cetera. And it feels like there's a second wave of perfect storm that could be coming here, Christina.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the system was fragile going into the pandemic for a lot of the issues that you have raised and other issues as well, like the epidemic that we have with substance use and substance use disorder. And I'm sure that you read the pieces and the data that came out this week that was very disheartening around the increase.
Massachusetts, just for our listeners, Massachusetts had its worst year yet for fatalities due to the opioid crisis.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that, Tiziana, you're spot on, that there was a lot of fragility going into the public health crisis that we had, and that for the reasons you delineated, there has been an acute exacerbation of what has shown up in access to care, and to your point, particularly with access to care for people who live in low-income communities and people who are disproportionately Black and brown.
So, Michael, you know, I'm torn between continuing to stack this case, right? One of the pieces of data that came forward was, you know, Margaret Brennan, who runs the North Shore Community Health Center, talking about trying to recruit nurses at $120,000 a year and them saying that that didn't meet their cost of living needs, right? Which is just mind-boggling. Or moving into, okay, so what do we need to fix this? And I'm torn because it feels, Michael, like we could rack and stack the causes all day, right? And yet if we don't do that hard work, it might be hard to solve the problem. And yet we do actually need to start moving fast to solve the problem. So maybe a little bit about what you want, and then maybe we put that against the rack and stack of the problems, Michael. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. I've been using a phrase a lot lately, and I'm going to use it in this conversation with us today. As I say, pay now or pay greater later. And I say that because it's not just dollars, right? It's about our attention, our focus, our policy, our strategy. If we don't pay now, if we don't focus now, if we don't draw resources in the right places, in the primary care and the health safety net, into what you mentioned, Tiziana, the influx of vulnerable migrants that are coming into the Commonwealth, we will pay greater later when they're in our emergency rooms or they're inpatient or they're sicker or they're living shorter lives. So we now know just on the heels of the Health Equity Summit that we pay about $5.9 billion by not addressing health equity in this Commonwealth annually. And it's something we can actually address. When we talk about solutions, it's really, as Jim Hunt, my predecessor, used to always say, we need to repackage the Tylenol, right? The reality is we already know it works. Investments in loan repayment works. Getting providers the appropriate cost of the care that they're providing, the critical work that Christina and her members, our members do, that's commercial, that's Medicaid, and we made advancements with Medicaid. It's making sure we invest in residency programs, graduate medical education, so that we can have a pipeline of providers here in the Commonwealth. It's protecting pharmacy programs that provide savings for community health center providers. It's nurse practitioner residency programs. There's a myriad of solutions that our policymakers have in their hands right now, and we have so many champions, Chair Lawn and the House side of healthcare financing, Chair Friedman on the Senate side, who are champions for solutions. This is where policy matters, and your listeners have to plug in because it impacts their lives. When they start to think about affordability, access to care, this is where it matters.
So we're speaking with Michael Curry, who's the CEO of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers, and Christina Severin, who's the president of the Community Care Cooperative, or C3. After new data and testimony with the Massachusetts legislature about an urgent need from Massachusetts community health centers for funding and support as services shortages. Really, this is shortages. I just want to clarify, Michael, the healthcare financing chair on the House side, that's Cindy Friedman, is that right?
Friedman's the Senate chair.
Senate chair. Okay, thanks.
Chair Lawn.
Okay, I just wasn't sure that I had heard you correctly there. Sorry about that. So let me come back to you, Christina Severin. In the short term, can you get what you need from the legislature? I am mindful that there's a conversation going on right now between the House, the Senate, and the governor about a budget. Some of what Michael talked about are policy moves that are going to take some time. But, you know, we were just saying short-term and long-term. Are you getting the responsiveness? Michael's saying some praises there. But there's a budget that's going to be, God willing, on the table sometime in the next several weeks.
And I'm feeling optimistic. I think, you know, to take one example, Senator Friedman, fiercely aligned on our principles of the crisis in primary care, the need to address the crisis in primary care at community health centers, and the specific ideas that the Mass League shares, that C3 shares, and that Senator Friedman share on what we need to do to stabilize and then advance primary care at safety net organizations like federally qualified health centers. Specifically, for example, I am optimistic that we can try to pass legislation that would bring commercial rates. So what I mean by that is a commercial carrier that you might have, like Point 32 or Blue Cross, would be examples of commercial insurance in the Commonwealth, that we can bring health centers rates for commercial insurance that are no less than the rates that they get paid by Massachusetts Medicaid. That is an example of something that would improve the financial position of health centers.
So, Chris, I'm going to stop you there to make sure. I'm not sure even I understand this. Are you saying that right now, let's say a Blue Cross Blue Shield might reimburse to a service to a community health center at a lower rate than a Massachusetts state program might reimburse?
Yes. Generally speaking, federally qualified health centers get reimbursed at a rate that is lower for commercial insurance than it is for Medicaid.
I'm not sure I really understood that. Okay, and that is a huge piece of this. I'm sorry, please go ahead and finish your thought.
No, that's it. And I can happy to do it again and simplify the term. So commercial insurance, I don't want to call out anyone in particular. An example of a commercial insurer would be Point 32 Health. Another example would be Blue Cross, but again, to not call them out with specificity, and just to say in the commercial markets, that when a health center bills for that service and they're paid for that service, that what they are paid on average is an amount of money that is less than what they would get for Medicaid for that service.
So, Michael, you know, one of the things that's been on my mind is this growing sense of the interplay between our affordability and equity issues here in the state, housing and climate and transportation and health care. We're talking about the budget here and reimbursement rates, which are really important. We've talked, you know, you're one of the founders of the Health Equity Compact. We've been talking a ton with you over the last year about all these interlocking long-term systemic pieces. As I think about, you know, the levers that we want to push on here in the longer term, a key lever that you just want us hammering away at that can provide some relief for community health centers as well.
Yeah, I mean, again, and I think Christina spoke so eloquently to it, that stable, reliable payment is essential to health centers' financial viability. You know this, Tiziana, well, because we've talked about it so much over the years. If you walk into a health center, you're getting your teeth taken care of, your eyes, your mental health, your substance use disorder, that pain in your side. Hopefully we can catch it maybe when it's a stage one and not a stage four. We're treating patients who have shorter lifespans in large part, living 10, 15, 20 years less. Many of our elected officials lift up that disparity in life expectancy. We have an opportunity in the Commonwealth to put investment where it saves lives, makes a difference, and it actually saves costs, that we can get them in lower cost settings like community health centers and treat them in ways. And then health centers go upstream. 80% of what drives our health status has nothing to do with the care we get. It's in the community. And in 1965, those founders of health centers were trying to solve for access to clean water, getting you a job, getting you an education, getting you access to services that were not necessarily healthcare services. We're still doing that today. So how do we invest where it makes the most sense for the Commonwealth? I think we are headed in that direction, but we need your listeners to plug in, to become voters who ask the question of their elected officials. What are we doing to support our community providers, our community health centers? What are we doing to support the health safety net? And I think many people are stopping me on the street to say that they're listening.
All right, Michael Curry, Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers, and Christina Severin of the Community Care Cooperative. Thanks so much to both of you. And as you know, we will continue this conversation, but I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.